Welcome to the Agency in Focus, Department of Veterans Affairs, sponsored by Leidos. Now here's your host, Tom Temin.
Congress has spent 2 years passing Veterans Affairs reform legislation. Members now see their job as making sure it all gets carried out. One member who's been busy at the task, Minnesota Democrat Tim Walz, ranking member of the House Veterans Affairs Committee. Last month, we heard from Republican Chairman Phil Rowe of Tennessee. Now we're joined by Representative Walz. Good to have you on.
Well, thanks for having me, Tom. Appreciate it.
Now, you have introduced a bipartisan proposal for auditing of the VA. Tell us the scope and what that measure would do.
Yeah, I think, and one of the things is I think many of your listeners know that I'm still in the VA, and I think a lot of it comes from because of the bipartisan nature, but it's still not easy to get things done, but the bipartisan nature of caring for veterans, the importance of the VA, and I've always been a really strong proponent of our federal agencies being as transparent as they possibly can be, and then making sure that that we have a good understanding of where money's being spent, where we could plus up budgets. So it's not an ideology going into it when people think audit, that it's somehow a negative piece. It's not. We know, and I know, and I fought hard for VA care is some of the highest quality in the world. I've got a unique position where I also am the representative of the Mayo Clinic out in Minnesota. So I understand healthcare, I understand quality delivery. The VA does it. One of the problems is trying to get a grasp on where we're spending resources and how we better target them. So that was the purpose of it. It just kind of meant to give us a little better picture.
And how would the audit work? What kind of mechanism do you envision?
Well, that's one of the things we're coming up with, and we don't know. You know, I've done the same thing with the Pentagon. I pushed it over there on DOD. You know, I'm a 24-year veteran, so it's not an attempt to try and embarrass anyone. That we just have to figure out. I think our biggest concern and why this came up for me was we continue to do short-term reauthorizations of the care in the community, the CHOICE Act, and we really don't have an understanding of how much we're spending, where we're spending. And I think, you know, for my Republican colleagues and Dr. Rowe himself, being a physician and understanding this, trying to get a grasp on, you know, how much efficiency we are getting out of seeing patients, but with an understanding that the VA is unique. One of the things that many veterans talk about is they never feel rushed out of their physician's office. That comes at its, you know, with its own costs. So at this point in time, what we're asking is to work in partnership with our friends in the VA, with our friends who are at the IG and different places where we can start to function and put that together as a tool of efficiency, a tool of understanding where we're at. And again, I want to be very clear. I think a lot of people, when they see Congress starting to audit something, it's seen as a punitive hammer. That was not our goal.
So you would look at the financials of the CHOICE program,
correct,
but also the program efficacy and how it works.
That's
in
right.
real life?
That's right. That's what we'd like to try and do. And I think the VA does a pretty good job of that. The VA's Inspector General's office is very efficient. They're really good. We bring over a GAO. Helps us a lot on trying to figure this out, and I think there's an openness to try and get those efficiencies. But I think it's one of the things that the last year has shown me in a time of transition that we're going to have to be. And again, I think Dr. Rowe points out we've significantly plussed up the VA budget. I'm very proud to have been a part of that. The one thing that sometimes gets neglected is that we needed to because of the usage, the current conflicts, the aging Vietnam veterans, all of those things. And yet during that time, we haven't, I don't think, provided enough data to show where those taxpayer dollars are doing, which I believe they are doing, much good. We just have to have data to show it. So it's pretty broad. I think it's as much my purpose was to kind of start the conversation.
And while we have you, you know, the new secretary, David Shulkin, has been a whirling dervish of activity on a number of fronts in VA, very visibly. What's your assessment of his performance so far?
Yeah, well, the secretary and I was very appreciative of him when he served under, and as I think maybe, again, many of your listeners know, he's the real only holdover from President Obama's administration. I am a big fan of the secretary. I advocated publicly when they were looking at others that he should have been the person. I think the secretary understands the issues. He's a clinician. He understands the workings on Congress, and so I think he was the right person for the job. He and I have, you know, and I think it's appropriate to have a little bit of tension with, you know, with the civilian branch, with the funding sides of things, to go back and forth. But it's always, you know, I've never questioned his commitment towards veterans. I've never questioned his commitment to try and get it right. And I think he's got a tough job because the tensions that come out of the administration, when he gets crosswise with some of the other things, he has to figure out how to make those work. But I think it's one of the most difficult jobs in America. I said at the time, and I think I still believe it, I'm not sure there's anybody that would be better positioned and better prepared. And the trust that he's earned on the Hill helps us get through some of these little, you know, rockier times because he's just that competent. And so at this point in time, he's doing what needs to do. We continue to try and improve veterans care. That's what my constituents, that's what the American people want. At the same time, trying to protect taxpayers. So he's doing what he needs to do, and we need to have him continue to be engaged with us.
We're speaking with Representative Tim Walz, ranking member of the House Veterans Affairs Committee. And getting back to some of the detailed issues here, you have been pushing the VA to expand the Veterans Choice Card eligibility. What do you hope to accomplish with that one?
The thing is, and this is complex, and I think your veteran listeners know this well, the VA and the care they get in the VA hospital is rated incredibly high amongst them. Access issues are real, and it doesn't necessarily just a rural area where I'm at of trying to get rural veterans in, our 5 million rural veterans, trying to get them closer. You don't want to have them drive from southwest Minnesota up to Minneapolis or wherever it might be across the country.
And not this winter.
No, that's right. And those are real issues with people, and they don't want to do that. So, and again, it just makes good sense. And which we've always done this is that there is funding for community-based care. If you're going to get a blood test and you can go to the local hospital, and if we can get the records transferred over, as long as the VA internal capacity and the VA coordination remain strong. So what we're trying to figure out in light of Phoenix, we created the CHOICE program. And it's very clear there is an ideological thought out there amongst some that we should just close down the VAs and give people a card and let them go anywhere else. Veterans are almost unanimously opposed to that. They understand the specialty care and the research delivered to the VA is second to none. They understand they were guaranteed this care. And they also understand that there's not a magic fix in the private sector. So a lot of times we get caught in debating VA healthcare outside of broader healthcare. And so the CHOICE program, while it has promise and it's something I do believe that there's a need to have a hybrid model, it has not functioned the way it's supposed to. It was hastily put together. Networks of providers were not developed. We have no, again, going back to the auditing of the cost, we have no real idea what it costs to deliver that care. And with all of those things out there, I'm a little miffed that we continue to just do these short-term reauthorizations of a program that is not working as designed. And so I think it's time to go back, reevaluate that, figure out ways that we can make sure that the internal capacity of the VA is funded, but we're making it easier for veterans to get their care. And so this is one of the stickier issues because it starts to fall in, especially folks who aren't deep into it or don't really know the functioning of how veterans get care, it becomes a proxy fight for privatization of government services.
Sure.
And the answer is not private sector or all VA. It's a hybrid vision of it. And that's where CHOICE is the sweet spot.
And pursuant to strengthening those networks in the CHOICE program, Secretary Shulkin has proposed somehow maybe combining the networks, the exterior networks that are also accessible to active members of the military.
That's right.
To increase the weight and the buying power and so forth.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Yes. That is exactly where we're going at. And I think those are some of the things in the private sector too. We have Indian health care and those types of things. Why we wouldn't be allowed people, you know, that are able to cross over with the ACA to use some of those existing networks. And I think that's the type of smart things we should be thinking about. Again, I think there is a lot of ideological internal pressure in the White House to move as much as we can from government services. I think what the secretary understands is that just doesn't make sense in the care of veterans. But I will be the first to say not using external, community-based care is not the right thing for veterans either. So I think when Secretary Shulkin brings that up of buying efficiencies, I was a big proponent since I've been here over the last decade or so, that it made no sense to me that when I got out of the military, and of course that time I have a paper record or whatever, I drop off the cliff and then I have to spend all this energy, and other people do too, trying to get back into the VA system. So the secretary made an executive decision that I am grateful for, and he said, why are we not using the same record system as the DOD, and those records would migrate directly over and there would be no drop-off? That's the type of, I think, efficiencies and smart thinking that the secretary has proven he can do. And he's got the support of Congress to do it. So that's what's going on with that program.
Medicine generally in rural areas of the United States is often suspect. I mean, we hear stories after stories about rural care. Do you think that maybe with VA strengthening networks in remote areas, that could almost spark a resurgence in health care availability to rural population generally?
Yeah, I think that's a great I think that's a great conversation piece. Well, I do know that the community-based outpatient clinics, the CBOCs, some of them run by the VA, some of them were contract care, have brought that care out to folks. And it certainly sparks the debate that Americans have is how do we continue to deliver health care the way we are now? I'm having this in my congressional district where there's consolidations of hospitals. And I'll tell you what, if you want to see a community get fired up, talk about closing some of the services in their local hospital. And I've got a town of 20,000 that they're talking about closing the birthing unit and some of the inpatient surgery unit and transferring it to, and it may sound not like that big a deal to a community 20 miles away, but that's a fundamental shift, and that's happening because of cost drivers. So you bring up a good point, and I continue to ask us to bring this back to it. I always think we talk veterans care in a vacuum that creates unreasonable expectations and doesn't get us that energy of, like you said, with the secretary. I mean, most of your listeners would be saying, yeah, it makes sense to combine DOD and veterans care, but there's going to be those people that say, as long as doing that doesn't delay my care or doesn't wait my wait time, because especially when it comes to veterans or military members, I think there is an expectation that was one of the benefits that we said, if you serve this nation, this is something you're going to get. And anytime you change that a little bit, not that they're not willing to be flexible, but that's a pretty big change for them. And so I think that's what, when you poll the public, this is interesting, Tom, when you poll veterans, the vast majority of them, what they see as a choice is a high-quality, well-staffed VA hospital. When you ask the public what they think, they said these veterans should be given a card and be able to go wherever they want, which sounds like giving them more choices, more freedoms, or whatever. What we found is it doesn't work that way. It doesn't coordinate care. They don't get as good of results, and they're much more frustrated. So it's your point is well taken, that does this change how we think about rural care for civilians as well as veterans? And is there some way there to get energy out of both? And I think the answer is yes.
Minnesota Democrat Tim Walz is ranking member of the House Veterans Affairs Committee. In part two of the interview, Walz comments on the level of transparency Congress and the public have into VA. We'll post links to more information and to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. Subscribe to all of our interviews at iTunes or Podcast One. I'm Tom Temin.
Leidos is proud to support the VA and its mission to care for Americans' veterans. Leidos is committed to advancing the next generation of healthcare at the VA through outcome-based solutions and scalable IT. We strive for better access to care and improved health outcomes for our men and women who served. Leidos was recently named Washington Technology's number one government contractor in IT, systems integration, professional services, and telecommunications. For nearly 50 years, we have developed practical answers for a complicated world. To learn more, visit leidos.com.
For Representative Tim Wald, the Veterans Affairs Department is a work in progress. As the ranking member of the House Veterans Affairs Committee, the Minnesota Democrat has been at the heart of 2 years of reform. One of the areas Walz would like to see next to improve at VA is transparency. He says the agency does a fine job in reporting medical results and trends. The problem is elsewhere.
The weakness in the VA system is a very weak, in many cases, non-existent HR system. And it's more archaic. It's very hierarchical. And then you get these situations where you get a demonization of workers, especially senior-level executives who need to be demonized at times, but many times do not. And I think it's because they're making decisions that should be handled by a professional HR, handled by policies more. And so my transparency pushes have almost all focused on that ability to try and get that out there. Because, again, I worry you often, especially, federal workers listening, as someone who knows this, like as a public school teacher or whatever, the person who dislikes a bad teacher is the good teacher next door. The person who's frustrated with a federal worker not doing their job is the good federal worker that's there. And I think for far too long, the lack of transparency has created a myth that is untrue in many cases, that you can't discipline, you can't remove a federal worker. What I've asked for is that what we need to really be concerned about is, how are we going to attract and retain the really good folks that deliver these services, whether it's veteran services, transportation, whatever? And so I make the case that, again, going after transparency is a way to tell the story, to have the facts, and then let the public see what really is working.
And you mentioned HR. Now, there are a lot of open positions at VA, but one of them that they have filled is the Assistant Secretary for Human Resources and Administration, Peter Shelby. And there's a longstanding Director of Leadership and Professional Development. They've got an academy in Baltimore where they do training and so
That's
forth
right.
for leadership. What would you push them to do to, as you say, you know, increase the power and strength of the HR function there?
Yeah, and well, they need to tell Congress what they need in an honest way and try and take it out of this idea, because I'm proud. We did an Accountability Act, but once again, I would say some wanted to characterize that as a way to, you know, to attack federal workers. That was not the case at all. The idea was to make sure due process whistleblowers were protected, and there was some structure that was brought to that. I would think these directors, and you're absolutely right, I'm glad that's one that's finally been filled, that they start to think about ways to incorporate best practice HR into the system. And that's where you could get a lot of these HR functions are being handled by the workers themselves inside their union representation, which is a very important function and always has been. But I think one of the ways that you could get more collaboration between administration and that workforce that's out there is by the strengthening of this, of hiring those positions, of working one to that same goal. So I'm hopeful it gets there, but I've seen time and time again, just pure lack of that structured HR leads to all kinds of dysfunction inside the system, which I think opens up the political attacks that instead of fixing it, we should just get rid of it. Or, you know, this narrative that government can never function, which is, you know, when it doesn't function right, we should fix it. But we should also acknowledge when it is doing things, and I think that's with the VA was, you know, probably up until Phoenix, certainly if not the most, one of the most respected federal agencies. And then the wait times at Phoenix spiraled this to a point where it's hard now to attract some people in that. And I think that's where an HR department plays a critical role.
And Congress did make some legislative fixes to the personnel system at VA with longer probation for new executives and new people hired in and so forth. Do you think that the legislatively, on the legislative front, you're pretty much finished and now it's up to the agency to act on it?
Yeah, I think so. And I think there was some angst with some of those things. But again, there's always going to be, especially when you saw real, you know, deficiencies like Phoenix and other places, there's going to be some changes. I think there has been a little bit of a counterbalancing, if you will, that, you know, people railed that people were receiving bonuses. Well, some of those people should have never received bonuses, and some of those people I personally railed against because of lack of what they were doing. But the danger with that is that there were literally thousands of folks that were being paid under market value, and when you're a hospital administrator, you are in high demand, and I believe in market forces. So if you're in a community that can hire you away to the private sector, pay you a lot more, and not put you through some of the things publicly that we were doing to some of these administrators, that worried me. So I do think that legislatively we're in a pretty good spot. We gave powers to the secretary, as I would say, to be able to hire and retain, if needed, to discipline accordingly in due process. And I think we struck a pretty good balance. But I think your point is that now it's time for that new undersecretary to start focusing on the putting in some of the systemic changes to HR that let people know how things are going to be carried out. And more importantly, I think most of us, that this idea that it's all about punitive, if we get someone in, it's in our best interest, the money we've invested in, to continue to train them, get them there, and retain them, because it just costs a lot of money in the long run to let people go and then rehire, retrain, and then try and keep them. So I've tried hard to move the narrative a little bit more is that I'm deeply concerned. We've got 40,000 open positions at the VA, and I will be the first to acknowledge, and I'm sure your listeners are saying the same thing, because it's so damn hard to get a job there at many times because of what you have to go through and how long it takes to get there, instead of just saying, you know, I can't wait 9 months as a physician to transfer over. I can't have the uncertainty. Is there any way to streamline that process? And I think that's maybe the next step for Congress to work on, credentialing, not shortcutting, but making credentialing smoother and some of those things.
Minnesota Democrat Tim Walz is ranking member of the House Committee on Veterans Affairs. I'm Tom Temin.
Leidos is proud to support the VA and its mission to care for Americans' veterans. Leidos is committed to advancing the next generation of healthcare at the VA through outcome-based solutions and scalable IT. We strive for better access to care and improved health outcomes for our men and women who served. Leidos was recently named Washington Technology's number one government contractor in IT, systems integration, professional services, and telecommunications. For nearly 50 years, we have developed practical answers for a complicated world. To learn more, visit leidos.com.
We're speaking with Representative Tim Walz, ranking member of the House Veterans Affairs Committee. And construction and information technology have been two real bugaboos for VA, as we've seen in the Aurora Hospital. And in prior efforts to try to get their back office systems going so that they have reasonable intake of appointments and so forth. What's your thinking of what has to happen there next? And do you think they're sufficiently funded for what they have to do on these infrastructure issues?
Well, that's a good question. And you're right. And there's certainly no excusing the actual construction. I had advocated for years, and I'm glad in 2015 it finally moved that way, that VA does a lot of things right. Building hospitals is not one of them. The Corps of Engineers and other contractors can step into that space. But the IT piece is, again, that has bugaboo is the right word. I have and told them, and I'm glad Secretary Shulkin made a decision instead of patching together old DOS, you know, operating systems, that we're going to move forward. I hope everybody listening knows that's going to be a 6 to 7 year process. It's hard to migrate all those records over. You know, moving over to the Cerner system is going to be a challenge. But there has been systemic failures, and I don't know other word to do that, in IT and in technology. And there's been good people hired to that position, high quality private sector folks. So I at this time, and I think with the migration over to Cerner starting to put it in alignment with DOD. Another reason for the audit is that I think they're underestimating their need. And I think this is going to be the fight, as it always is on Capitol Hill, over money and resources. And I'll be the first to say, more money doesn't always fix the problem. But in IT, and any of us, you know, from our homes to our small businesses to the large enterprises, it costs money. It's rapidly changing. I'm not sure that they're there yet. I'm not sure that we have a fundamental understanding how to best do that. My hope is, and it's one of the things I think Congress providing oversight and forcing the issue, is that the alignment of the medical records starts to get us out of those silos where DOD knows some of the answers to these, why aren't we asking them, and vice versa. And while they don't have the same mission, if you will, it eventually becomes the same mission, the care of those citizens who are willing to serve the country. While you're active duty, it's keeping you in a place where you are ready fighting force. When you're off, it's improving your quality of life and following through with our commitments. So the IT portion of that is simply meant to be a tool to make that better. But I do think that is an area, if there's a fair critique, that we just continue to put more money into something over the years that's a valid point. Hopefully we've turned the corner a little bit with this Cerner acquisition on VA to align with DOD.
And a final question, are you optimistic they'll get after that backlog of veterans' disability claims appeals?
Yes, and I'm optimistic because they have to. This is one of our true failures. We have made progress, but again, it's pretty zero-sum to me. As if you have someone waiting an average of 6 years for an appeal that goes to the judges, no one thinks that's okay.
Minnesota Democrat Tim Walz is ranking member of the House Committee on Veterans Affairs. There's much more to the interview. We'll post it in its entirety at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. Subscribe to all of our interviews at iTunes or Podcast One. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Agency in Focus, Department of Veterans Affairs, sponsored by Leidos on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. The entire program can be found on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search Agency in Focus.